ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Anthony Burke here, host of By Design on ABC Radio National, a show about the clever ideas and human stories behind the spaces, systems, and objects shaping everyday life. Whether you're curious about architecture, interior design, fashion, or anything in between, we reveal why design matters in a rapidly changing world. By Design on ABC Listen.
I suppose I would have been about 10 or 11, and we had a minister of religion once a week, just compulsory teaching to classes there. And he was talking about Noah's Ark and explaining the story. And I remember puzzling in my mind very strongly, how the heck could they have got two frogs of the corroboree from Mount Kosciuszko onto Noah's Ark? I just quietly thought that over, and then I began to wonder, and I thought, this must be not true.
What we're doing is the origin stories of super scientists.
All right, okay, well.
And we are referring to you as one of them because that's what we think.
That's interesting, since I've never had a Bachelor of Science or anything originally.
University degrees don't teach you everything you need to know to be a hero. This episode of What the Duck was made at a time when the Earth needs heroes. And every superhero has an origin story, the events in their life that led them to become super. You know, Wonder Woman was sculpted in clay by her mother, who was a Greek queen, an Amazon famous for a magic girdle, daughter of a god of war. But we don't need more myths or more girdles. We need real heroes, nature's superheroes. But where would they come from? This episode, Australia's tadpole queen, Dr. Marian Anstis. If there was a portrait that was painted of you when you were a child, what would it look like? What would little Marian have in that portrait with her?
Just straight blonde hair and tied back with a bobby pin, sitting in the garden beside a dish of tadpoles that had, of course, water in it, and the frogs were breeding in our garden in Penshurst.
Penshurst is a suburb in Sydney.
And I used to just watch them grow, and then another species of frog came there. So I was starting to realise the difference in the tadpoles. Even at the age of 8 or 9, I was starting to see a difference.
Marian Anstis was lucky. She found her passion early in life.
When I went to primary school, I used to take Hal Cogger's book that he did with the Australian Museum called Frogs.
Excellent title.
That was like my Bible then, because he had all these pictures of the corroboree frog developing through from the egg.
From spherical eggs tucked into mossy hollows and then tadpoles through to the bright yellow and dark black poisonous frogs of the Australian Highlands. I can understand why that got her interest.
And I started immediately to latch on to the development side of frogs and got really interested in that from a very early age.
And this brings us to the moment when Marian realised that organised religion had some iffy factual issues, as the priest in her primary school told the gathered children about Noah's Ark.
How the heck could they have got two frogs of the corroboree frog from Mount Kosciuszko onto Noah's Ark? And immediately that I asked that question to myself, I didn't want to embarrass him or become such an idiot to the rest of the class. That's how they would have seen me, peer group pressure and all of that.
Marian didn't take this as a jolly story of faith in the apocalypse. No, she took the words literally, like the priest was reading from a data sheet of a field trip.
And I couldn't see how it could be true.
She was approaching the story with an eye on the science, not the symbolism. She was a little baby science superhero.
Because I already knew a lot about fauna and flora and wildlife and insects and things from my own observations. And I thought, there's no way they can get all them on board. And two doesn't mean they're going to create a population because of inbreeding, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, well, anyway.
See, that's incredible amount of insight for a child so young. What sort of household was it growing up?
Very average. I suppose you'd say not really working class. My father was a toolmaking engineer and he had a small business. So we survived, but he built the house. He built it at Penshurst, and he built a caravan and he built a boat as well. He was amazing.
Yeah.
But he was always interested in the bush, and I think that's probably the key to why I started to get interested. At high school, I wasn't good at maths, so that precluded me from taking up the scholarship I received at the leaving certificate, and I was offered a scholarship to do zoology at Sydney University, and I wish now that I had taken it, but I thought, oh, I won't have the maths level. I did music as well and did a performance test, and that meant that I had an option to become a high school music teacher as well. So I ended up taking that because I knew the holidays would give me time to pursue my interests in the bush.
Marion, that's really fascinating, right? Because you potentially had this opportunity that you would have had a full lifetime career in herpetology.
Yeah.
But instead you divided your work life and your frog life.
Yes.
But this is interesting because that means you had quite a high level of proficiency. What was your instrument?
Treble recorder, would you believe?
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
So does that mean that in that portrait of you, little Marion, should there actually have been some musical instruments as well?
Oh, I guess, yes. I certainly had to practice the recorder. I couldn't get through just holding it up and looking good.
Oh, yeah. So it was off to Teachers College and then back into schools. She might have been a fully qualified music teacher with a full-time job.
Well, there was, of course, teaching through the week. At night you've got to do homework marking and all that sort of thing.
But it was the song of frogs which filled her mind.
And then on a weekend, if the weather was right, I'd be able to drive out to some place where there were frogs calling that were known to be calling and breeding and so on. A friend from New Guinea came down and he went out frogging with me and he just couldn't believe how I was able to pick the differences in some of the tadpoles.
Maybe 20 or so by this stage, Marion had been observing tadpoles for 12 years or more. But it didn't necessarily strike her yet that her skill in being able to look at little jelly blobs wriggling around in a pool of water and identify the species was anything special. It took someone else to point it out to her.
And he said, you need to start taking notes about this. So I started getting some field notebooks and taking notes and recording dates, places, sites where they were calling and all that sort of thing.
Her thoughts become even more ordered. Her capacity to take in detail increases exponentially.
I had met a professor in Adelaide University, Professor Michael Tyler, who's passed on now, but you would have heard of him.
Oh, little aside. Professor Mike Tyler was originally a Brit who hitchhiked to Australia in 1959 and then eventually established himself as a world expert in the amphibians of Australia. He was known as the Frogman, and he even won an Ig Nobel Prize for sniffing stressed frogs. He was a busy guy, all right, but he could still spot a fellow frog friend when he saw one.
Because he knew I was interested in tadpoles. And so he taught me how to use a stereoscopic microscope with a drawing tube attached. And that opened a whole world to me because I could then put a preserved tadpole under the microscope and there's a big mirror, takes your image onto your page. So you could trace around it. And that's how they did scientific drawings back then.
Keeping in mind that this is Marion's hobby. You know, hanging out with leading experts and learning how to replicate nature in exquisite, clear detail through her drawings. And so it continues for a while in a similar vein, teaching during the week, and then on weekends and holidays, getting as far away as she could while still being able to get back in time for class. For example, right up into the New England Tablelands in New South Wales.
There was this rare frog up there that I had described with the professor from Adelaide as a new species. He didn't believe it was a new species. And then when I found the tadpole and I looked at it and I couldn't believe the mouth, it had no tooth rows, no jaws, nothing, just all these tentacles all over the mouth. Well, the weirdest looking mouth you could ever imagine.
And do you know what those tentacles are for?
I do not, except that I think that they are used to scrape off fine particles of silt on the rocks, and they can use their mouth only to propel themselves forward without using the tail. Yeah, but I think they use their mouth like a vacuum cleaner.
Absolutely not what I thought would be in the mouth of a tadpole. But then who thinks about the mouths of tadpoles? It's people like Marion Anstis and Mike Tyler.
So I sent him preserved tadpoles and I sent him photos of the frogs and I had to send him some live frogs which he preserved. And we ended up describing it as a new species. So that was exciting.
What was the species name?
Latoria subglandulosa. It had a gland below the jaw. And so that was different. So Mike Tyler just conjured up that name.
But does that tentacle-mouthed tadpole, prominently glanded frog have a common name? One that we can all remember?
The New England tree frog.
The New England tree frog.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And that was in 1975 that came out. And so we were going up there to try and find more of these frogs because they were so unusual. Then I was in a plane accident. It was a one-way strip and a cow rushed out as we were coming into land and my dad, who was flying, had to put on full power and try and clear the trees at the end of the strip. And he remembers in his mind reading an article, if you have to land in trees, which he knew he had to, clip one wing only, because then it will spin the plane around horizontally and stop it nosediving and blowing up. So I'm in the back seat and my then boyfriend was in the front passenger seat and we spun around and the plane broke up but it didn't burn. So we had to get an ambulance from Armidale Hospital came out to get us and take us in. It was a five-hour trip because of the spinal injuries. So I didn't have any spinal injuries. I was in the back seat and there was a dozen eggs in there and none of them broke. So that was ridiculous. And I can't remember any of this. I've been told that's what happened. Thank goodness I have nil memory of the event.
Now that is a true what the duck moment. When frogging turns into a friggin' nightmare. Just another chapter in the adventures of Marion Anstis, herpetologist at large. One of Marion Anstis's superpowers is the ability to observe and describe, being able to draw in tremendous detail the very odd things like those mouth tentacles is a core super science skill. But simply being good didn't seem like it was enough for Marion. She wanted to leapfrog this practice into the future.
A lot of the drawings that had been done back then, they copied every wrinkle on the preserved specimen and every misshapen bend in the body.
It is, frankly, actually really hard to catch tadpoles and frogs, and even harder to get them to sit still for a portrait. So science drawings were generally taken off preserved specimens. But if you've ever seen an artichoke floating in a jar, you'll know it doesn't really look alive.
I wanted to approach it a bit differently from what I'd seen already published in scientific journals. I wanted to draw them how they looked in life. So it was something I've always determined to do, to try and bring my work across to the general public, not just to scientists who would only be the ones who'd see scientific publications. I wanted to make it broader to the average person, to have some live pictures, you know, have the tadpole in life, the eggs in life, the metamorphs when they come through in life, and the adult frogs. So you see the whole picture, but a living animal, not just a preserved specimen.
But how? How would one woman collect all that information, and then where would it go?
Gradually, towards the end of my teaching life, I was 1999, a friend just said to me, "Marion, you should write a book on tadpoles." And I said, "I can't write a book on tadpoles." And she said, "Who else could?" And I thought about it and I thought, suppose there's not too many around that might have background knowledge or interest.
And I'd add the drive to actually put in all of that hard and detailed work.
Then I had to learn how to photograph them live.
Yep, like the drawings, many of the photos in circulation, especially of tadpoles, were of specimens, that's dead ones, rather than animals, that's live ones.
And what gave me the ability to do that was when I had learnt from Mike Tyler in Adelaide that you can anaesthetise the tadpoles and put them in a tank to photograph them, make them look natural, and then they recover in water. And then you can raise them through to metamorphs to check what you've got if you're not sure.
That is, you raise them to make sure you've matched the identity of the species across that whole life cycle.
So that opened up the whole world to me for photography. The ability to photograph them and not kill them was terrific.
And if you've ever tried to take a photo of a tadpole in a puddle, you'll know, as I do, that it's impossible. There's water reflection, the depth, the tannins. But like a superhero, these things don't bother Marion. The photos she takes are so crisp and so clear, it's frankly supernatural. And now I know that in each of those photos the subject is snoozing, it's even more magical. I mean, what do tadpoles dream of? And so were you still teaching music in schools at this point?
Yes. I retired in 2001.
When you get freed from the paid teaching work and you get to be a frog woman.
What I want to be, yes.
What was that like?
Oh, it's quite exciting. It was like a rebirth, a new life again. So I had two lives, really. The first part with the music teaching and then the second part was probably where my passion really deeply lay, most deeply lay. And so it was like a rebirth it invigorated me completely. And so I got stuck into it. And when I had that book published.
Marion's talking about her first book, Tadpoles of Southeastern Australia here. It's the only book I've ever seen of its type. But it was only one corner of Oz that she covered.
Then other states were saying, "Oh, Marion, we want one of our tadpoles, Western Australia,
please,
and Northern Territory. Oh, we want one of ours." So New Holland, the publishers of that book, they said, "Don't do one of each state, Marion, do the whole country."
And how do you draw or photograph or both every single species in a country when you're a retired music teacher? You go it alone.
Started in 2002 when I was fully retired. I purchased a four-wheel drive, six-cylinder Mitsubishi Challenger and a camper van, and I got all set up so that I could have tadpoles in the back of the station wagon in fruit boxes, you know, those foam fruit boxes.
Yeah.
And my dad put in 9 compartments cut in masonite equally in each fruit box. And that supported the plastic bags of half filled with pond water from wherever I was. So I had tadpoles with me when I was out in the field and had to keep driving. So what I had to do was chase the wet season wherever it occurred right across the country. So I might be chasing cyclones in far northwestern Australia, because after the cyclones, the frogs breed. Then I might have to turn around and race across the top end to get to Townsville because things were happening. There was mad breeding in Cape York. Oh dear, it was fun. I had to not only photograph the adults late at night and try to get a pair of breeding frogs so that I could then put them in a container so they'd lay their eggs overnight, and I'm in my camper van at a caravan park somewhere way out and waiting for the eggs to be laid. Then I would put the frogs back where I got them from in the environment and photograph and measure the eggs under the microscope, and get some idea of how they laid their eggs, because I knew even at the egg stage there were differences in species.
Yeah.
Most people think all eggs are frothy on the top. They're just not. That's only one group of frogs have frothy eggs. A lot of the tree frogs don't ever have froth. They lay them hidden under the water, attached to vegetation.
You can hear Marianne's passion, a supernatural energy that marks her as one of our science nature heroes. And all of this effort towards a book actually ended up becoming a PhD.
Yes, that's correct. It was called Tadpoles and Frogs of Australia, and I wanted the word tadpoles first in the title.
As it should be.
Yes.
Remembering that Marianne didn't even do an undergraduate in science, nothing. Her ascension to tadpole goddess status was self-led. Did you find every frog species in the country?
No, there's no way I could get to the breeding that occurred in Cape York in the wet season without a helicopter. Look, I am really grateful for is that I did it when I did it, because I was lucky enough to go across the top end when there were no cane toads. And now the cane toads have come across, and a lot of frogs, of course, as you can imagine, die out because the cane toad tadpoles are toxic. And our tadpoles, our native tadpoles, sometimes feed on the cane toad eggs and they're toxic. So we've lost a lot, and the habitat has been swamped in a lot of areas by these masses of bufo. They lay 36,000 eggs at a drop, and they might do that twice a year. They're just massive machines for breeding, and they're going right across the top end. So I was there before that invasion. So I saw our native tadpoles in their native habitats the way they should be. And I was so grateful, at least I've done that. And a lot of the photographs in the book you won't get now, because you won't find the frogs in the same sort of habitat. So it's pretty rare from that point of view as a photographic record.
Tadpoles and Frogs of Australia is a triumph of a book. Read it at bedtime and you'll get an arm workout holding it up and be able to dream of the wide world of frogs. Quite the retirement project it turned out to be.
Oh yes, it kept me out of mischief.
But it must have been frustrating that when you do a new edition of the book, you got to update it with all of the new species that keep getting found with genetics and all of that.
Oh, wow. This one was a humdinger. The third edition has 22 new species plus 21 new genera, including one that was in Western Australia that actually uses my name in it, which was quite exciting. That happened. A colleague of mine wanted to give me some recognition. He said, "Marin, they always give the men scientists names. They use their names in scientific names, but I wanted to use your name."
Abso-frogging-lutely.
He said, "It's about time these frogs in Western Australia went into a new genus, because the detailed development of this group of rare frogs in southwestern Australia that are nearly close to extinction now, it's terrible, but they are still going and managing somehow, and they're very cryptic and they hide in mud nests and lay their eggs, and the tadpoles never go in water. They're in the broken down jelly from the eggs.
Wow.
And they wriggle around and they never feed. They have yolk in their stomach and they're tiny, and they develop through these miniature little frogs, 6 millimetres long, and come out and sit on the top of the mud nest, and that's their life started like that."
It seems so apt that a weird group of little frogs would be named after Marianne Anstice, because who else have you ever heard of who excelled in the treble recorder, in teaching music to teenagers, and made a significant impact into the identification and thus conservation of a group of animals that is declining before our eyes? So you retired from the traditional workforce per se.
Yes.
But are you ever going to retire?
There's always things to do. And while I still can, I do. But I also want to see a lot more of Australia. And I need to go round looking up, because when I went round Australia before, I was looking down. So now I need to look up for the birds and other animals as well.
Marianne Anstice is a What the Duck endorsed science superhero. You don't need to look to Captain America. You don't need Iron Man or Wolverine or Wonder Woman or Captain Planet or the Milky Bar Kid, because we've got heroes right here in front of you and in your ears for ABC Radio National. This is What the Duck. I'm Dr. Anne Jones, and along with Rebecca McLaren, we produce this program on Wadawurrung and Tungurung country of the Kulin Nation.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.